KALW.
I feel like it was absolutely necessary for someone to take a stand, and why not it be me? Like, I need shelter for my children.
The homeless crisis in Oakland has pushed some people to extreme measures, like taking over an empty home they don't own.
This came out of absolute desperation, where your only option is to occupy a house or live with your children on the streets.
We'll hear how a few mothers in Oakland are making a bold statement about housing inequality in the city. Then we'll hear from musician Carly Bond about how her family history influenced the title of her first record, Heart Hunger.
I found out that my great-great-grandmother was a poet, and I found a book of hers for sale on the internet.
And we'll sing with an Oakland group that performs Eastern European traditional music. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. We've been getting a lot of rain this past week in the Bay Area, and though it may be good for our water supply, the storms and low temperatures are also a reminder of how many people in the Bay Area don't have a warm home to go to. In Oakland, city officials estimate that more than 4,000 people are homeless, and the Mercury News reports that more than half of the 10 poorest neighborhoods in the Bay Area are in Oakland. Homeless activists are demanding the city do more immediately, including a group of mothers who've taken over a vacant home in Oakland. KLW's Janae Darden is here to tell us more. Hey, Janae.
Hello, Hannah.
So there's a lot going on with the homeless crisis in Oakland. These mothers in West Oakland have been all over the news. Who are they?
Yeah, they're called Moms for Housing, and these are working mothers who've been squatting in a home on Magnolia Street for weeks now, and a real estate company in Southern California called Wedgwood owns the property, and they flip houses.
Okay, but you can't just go and inhabit a property that's not yours. Why are they doing this?
The mothers, they're doing this in part because in Oakland, there's 4 vacant homes for every homeless person in the city. Mm-hmm. And there's not much affordable housing in Oakland, and they can't afford the high prices. So, and they say the city isn't doing enough. Mm-hmm. So I spoke with one of the moms, Dominique Walker. She's 34. She has a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old. She's originally from Oakland, but moved back here from Mississippi in April after leaving an abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. And Hannah, I met her in front of the house following a rally for them to stay in the home. And I asked her what's unique to being unhoused as a woman and a mother.
It affected me, especially like when we had to sleep in hotels. It's very violent. There were men trying to prey upon me, and I'm trying to provide shelter for my children. So being homeless is very violent. It affects you mentally. It affects your physical health. And we know that on the streets of Oakland, 28% of that homelessness population are children under the age of 18. So it's affecting their brain development. And the same thing for my 1-year-old. Like, he didn't walk until he had a house. So I can only imagine what the children are sleeping in tents, like babies. They're not able to develop because they don't have the freedom to move around.
I mean, yes. If your child doesn't have that space to just, like, be free and crawl mm-hmm. or stand up or walk, whatever, you know, that's hard. So they're in this house. They took over a house. How do the neighbors feel about these mothers?
So Dominique says the neighbors have, for the most part, been supportive because the house was vacant for a few years. Mm-hmm. And neighbors were concerned, like, troublemakers or drug dealers would take it over.
Right.
Now, the mothers, they've cleaned up the house in the front. They hose down the outer walls. Electricity and plumbing works. During the rally, someone asked if they needed anything. But the mothers tell me one of their neighbors next door doesn't like that they're occupying the house.
Okay. So when somebody tells them what they're doing is wrong, you know, and illegal, what do they say to that?
Good question, Hannah. And here's what Dominique has to say about that.
This home isn't owned by a person. It's owned by a corporation. So nobody owns this home. A corporation owns this home. The people that own this house, Wedgwood, they're a displacement machine. And they don't deserve this house. I deserve to be here. And we're going to stay here and we're not leaving.
How do you feel about, you know, there's some danger to it possibly. How are you feeling about that as far as keeping your children safe?
I have a plan to keep myself safe and my children safe. We have security protocol.
All right, Janae. I mean, wow. So just two mothers live in the house?
You know, Dominique wouldn't answer when reporters asked that question. Mm-hmm. But she says there are four children in the home. And Hana, these are all Black mothers. Mm-hmm. And as you know, at least 70% of Oakland's homeless population are Black, even though we make up just under a quarter of the population.
Okay, let's zoom out. And, like, what's the bigger picture here?
So there's been a lot of buildup in the recent weeks to Mothers for Housing advocacy. Right before we broke for Thanksgiving, about 22 homeless unhoused activists, they had camped out in front of Oakland City Hall, and they were arrested, and they were protesting the crisis along with issues with unhoused people's vehicles being towed and cleanup crews throwing their things away when they would come and sweep encampments. Mm-hmm. And so the police arrested them for violating a curfew, and city officials say that they couldn't be on the property after a certain hour.
And then the following week, the city had a meeting about homelessness.
Yeah, there was a special life enrichment committee meeting that focused on homelessness. And city council members on that committee invited the public and advocates to attend. So the Human Services Department presented a 5-year proposed plan through their PATH framework. And PATH stands for Permanent Access to Housing. And this is to greatly reduce the number of homeless people in Oakland. And Human Services said it would cost $125 million a year and $220 million in a one-time capital cost.
To do what?
To ease this crisis. And this includes, like, more shelter beds and parking for RVs and transitional housing. And so right now the city spends about $34 million a year for homeless services.
Okay, so that's a big gap there.
Big.
What did you take away from that meeting?
I was surprised that when they said that 300 people become homeless in Oakland every month.
That's a big number.
That's a big number. And activists, they were not feeling the plan. They found that it didn't solve the immediate crisis, which was making the system more efficient. And they said the plan was vague and it needed to be more concrete. You know, there's been incidents where people are dying, you know, especially in this weather. People are dying out there. So Sharina Thomas, she's a single mother of four, and she experienced homelessness as a child. And she's an advocate with Moms for Housing. Mm-hmm. And here's what she had to say to city council members.
We need some right now solutions. It's raining. It's cold. People need a place to stay now. It's a state of an emergency. When y'all go home, y'all gonna go home and y'all gonna go in y'all house and y'all gonna close the door. Y'all gonna drive past a few homeless encampments. You gonna shake your head and you gonna act like it wasn't nothing. And it is something. This is not something that can go on for 2 years or come back in another month or a week or so and keep talking about it. Let's see some action here in Oakland. Let's see some doors opening up. Let's see some right now action.
And I want to clarify that Sharina, she tells me that she's housing insecure. She doesn't live with the mothers in the West Oakland house.
Okay. All right. So what is next for these mothers, though?
Well, the sheriff says that they have to vacate the property by December 17th at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. And they say they're not leaving. They're preparing to protest in front of the home at 2928 Magnolia Street.
Okay, thanks, Janae.
Thank you.
That was KELW's East Oakland reporter, Janae Darden. You can reach her at Janae, J-E-N-E-E, at KELW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Carly Bond is a songwriter and guitar player. Her band Myrna released their first full-length record this summer called Heart Hunger. She began writing her songs for it after she discovered a family secret. Through processing her family's history, she's crafted a synth-driven, dreamy landscape.
I started playing guitar in sixth grade, and I got this, like, funky little, like, children's guitar from Costco, and I taught myself how to play, like, some Peter Frampton song, and then took a couple, like, rock guitar lessons, and then kind of put it down for a little bit and played bass clarinet in my school's orchestra and did that for a few years. And then gradually I was like, I really want to get better at guitar, so I joined the jazz band and took some lessons and studied really hard for a couple years and then graduated high school and didn't know what the hell to do with my life. And everybody was like, wow, don't play music. Like, you're not going to make any money, which is really true. But also, it makes me really happy. But it's also super rewarding. I mean, you know, when you can go to work and not think of it as work and do like a, I don't know, 13-hour day and like not regret it. It feels really good.
So your band Myrna just released Heart Hunger, which is your first full-length record.
Yeah.
The name of the album, Heart Hunger, is a title from a poem written by your great-grandmother.
Yeah, my great-great-grandmother.
And can you tell us that story?
Yeah. So I was just kind of trying to research my own ancestral history. And luckily, my dad's side keeps a really good record. And I found out that my great-great-grandmother was a poet. And I found a book of hers for sale on the internet. And I bought it. It was like this really strange purchase. Like, there aren't very many of her books. It's not like she's a huge poet. So I bought this book for like $8 and I got it and it was signed by her in 1959. So I was just flipping through her book, kind of like kept it close throughout the recording process just to like get inspiration, I guess. Ready to break.
Tell us about the process of making this record for you.
It's very synth-driven, I think. I was really inspired by Kate Bush and Blue Nile, which are some pretty big 80s art rock forces. There's a lot of 808 drum machine on the tracks. Everything feels so hyped at the moment in terms of just like volume and dynamics, and everything's so bright in the way it's EQ'd. And I really tried to not do that because I feel like something I've missed in new records is just dynamics and texture, and not only trying to portray emotion through vocals, but like through the dynamics and instruments. Like to write alone. I'll usually kind of lock myself up in a hole. I guess come up with something very repetitive, almost like a meditation or something, and until the chords kind of just figure themselves out. Then it takes me a while to write the lyrics because I'm really picky. I'll usually write the structure and the lyrics, and then I'll bring it into the rest of the band and they kind of add their flavor, their special little flavor. If I'm lucky, it'll all come out together. It's one big soul vomit. I don't know.
So you also wrote part of this record in Big Sur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did being around that environment inform your work?
A lot, actually. The two songs I think I wrote there were Black Diamond Mine and Bluffs. But yeah, a lot of the environment there is like very inspiring. Being in nature is super inspiring. Having space away from the city allows my mind to be quiet. I feel like I'm not that eloquent of a speaker. So being able to kind of have space and create something very concise and to the point and full of emotion helps me.
Tell me about Black Diamond Mine.
Yeah.
What is that song about?
I think that's maybe my favorite song on the record. I guess because it's like really, really personal. It was inspired by a poem by Philip LaMantia, who's like an old beatnik, super mystic poet. I just wrote it about the complexity of the fact that, like, you are your parents, whether you want to be or not, and reconciling with that. That song is, like, the basis of the entire record, just kind of reconciling, seeing things. The chorus is about remembering not to forget the light that there is. Like, nothing is ever good or bad. There is light in the darkness, I guess. I remembered thinking to myself that I just wanted to write something, like, very simple and just, like, get whatever it is inside out in a, like, non-judgmental way and just, like, just write. It's pretty mellow. I mean, it's like, feels very simple and folky in a way. The name of the game in this time and place that we're all in, especially in the arts, is that you just have to keep doing it, and you have to keep doing it really hard. But I guess the thing that just keeps me going is learning that people are actually listening to the art that I'm creating, and creating with, like, some of my best friends who are so inspiring. I feel, like, unworthy, but, like, also really excited to have a chance to have people listening and, like, having some sort of a platform to, like, push this in people's faces. If, like, you're catching a little bit of a wave and people are enjoying it, I think you just have to keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going.
And keep
until
going.
You just can't. Yeah.
That was musician Carly Bond speaking with KELW's Truk Nguyen. Myrna is currently back in studio working on their second record. Keep an eye out for it. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hena Baba. Kitka is a women's singing ensemble based in Oakland. For 40 years, the group's been singing songs drawn from Eastern European vocal traditions in Slavic, Hungarian, and Bulgarian. A few years ago, I talked to Kitka artistic director Shira Sion and member Corinne Sykes. First, I asked Corinne what drew her to Eastern European traditional songs.
A lot of it has to do with the production of the voice and how open and strong that sound is compared with a lot of the style of singing that we might be more familiar with in this country. And so just really being taken by that openness.
And so when you say the singing is open and strong, what does mm-hmm. that mean?
It's much more forward. It's much, it may sound or seem louder, even if it's not technically louder. And kind of has to do a lot with the placement in the head. You know, where are you resonating and where are you sort of feeling that sound? So, for instance, like if we were just singing, you know, art songs or choral something or whatever, it might be like, you know, like, I don't even know what tune everyone sings, but like, Amazing Grace, how sweet, like very light, you know, would be a choral. Or opera is going to be a little bit more powerful, but still in that sort of rounded, like, you know, like a kind of sound, whereas, for instance, the Bulgarian open voice style or something like that is typically where people start, is going to be placed a lot more forward. So for instance, like, and kind of has to do a lot with the placement in the head. You know, where are you resonating and where are you sort of feeling that sound vibrate in your face?
Vibrate in your face.
Yes. Yes, I tell my students often to think about the cheekbones and the front of your teeth and things like this, as opposed to for, you know, if you're coaching opera, you might say, oh, lift the back of your palate, or, you know, think about seeing through the top of your head. You know, instructions like that are going to produce a different kind of resonance.
So let's talk about the Winter Songs tour. Are these winter songs all kind of happy, happy, joy, joy, joyful time, la, 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 or not?
Not at all. I mean, there are, of course, the requisite happy, happy ones. But then there's a lot of ones that speak to the cold, you know, or speak to the reality of winter or death or, you know, different things that may be associated with that time.
A lot of the recurring themes that occur in the carols have to do with, may you be healthy, may your flock produce an abundant, bigger flock, may your fields produce an abundant harvest. There are these setting very specific intentions for very specific people and animals and the land itself during a time of year where purely surviving is really difficult and not a guarantee. I think we live in times now where certain New Agey people talk about, you know, the power of setting intention or the power of visualization. But I think in traditional culture, it's a really deeply held belief that if you sing the right song with the right text at the right time to the right person, it's going to produce this effect. And I think we really like to hold that tradition as we're programming winter songs from year to year.
So let's hear a song.
Okay. This is a tune called Av Yerusalime.
Av Yerusalime.
Av Yerusalime. It's a Christmas carol talking about the series of feast days that surround the Nativity. It also is one of these songs in a typical caroling tradition that wishes health upon all of the listeners. Mm. And most importantly, the singers say, and as forgiveness for all of the mistakes we've made this past year, we ask you to give us chocolate. And
yeah.
Chocolate is a very important substance in keeping Kitka going. So,
yes.
And so it's sort of become a winter songs ritual. Those people who've sort of made coming to our winter songs concerts an annual tradition know to bring chocolate to the concert. And when
yes.
we sing this song, to bestow it upon us. And we've yeah. had all kinds of bonbons thrown at us.
That was Shira Sion and Corinne Sykes from Kitka. And Kitka is our local music today. They're performing this weekend in their hometown of Oakland, with more performances around the bay through December 22nd. Find the details at klw.org.
A po, a po. mean, ¿qué sería si Sarjón? Si Sarjón disaquería.
Tune in tomorrow at 5. The students of Berkeley High are fighting to make their campus more sustainable.
We're approaching a deadline, and it feels like we need immediate action, and I think that has to come from everyone in all areas of our lives.
Environmental activism tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. Today's Cross Currents team includes Imran Ali Malik, Sona Avakian, Julia Linus Goodman, Lisa Morehouse, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.